Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you for the afternoon, that's for sure. You know, folks, I got to tell you, we're very happy to be sponsored in part by IBEW Local 5 and the AFA-CWA, and we appreciate all the wonderful things that they are doing. In studio with me today, we've got Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back.
Hello, Charles. It's so happy to be with you for Just Transitions Labor, Environment, and Health.
It's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. And you brought a guest with you today.
I did. We're having a wonderful discussion about how you go about investing and financing in solar and renewable projects. And my guest today is John Powers. He is the chairman and co-founder of Clean Capital LLC. He is an investor relations and marketing director, and his passion from clean energy comes from his time serving in the U.S. Army in Iraq. And he has the perspective that the clean energy economy is vital to protect our America's national security interest, which is a perspective we haven't explored too much yet. And he served as President Obama's Federal Chief Sustainability Officer. John, welcome to our program.
Thanks so much for having me, Patty, and real excited to be on the Union Edge.
Absolutely. So tell us how you got into this business. You were a veteran and you ended up with your good friend Kevin Johnson starting up Clean Capital. How did that happen?
Yeah, it's a long story. I'll keep it sort of short, but it actually started. Kevin and I were in the Army together, and like many veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, had a pretty life-changing experience over there. Came home. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, decided to get involved in clean energy, because I knew that there was a better way than what we were facing, and spending what we were seeing firsthand, fighting for, you know, what many people would argue is sort of oil and energy security base in the Middle East, and moved into a path of sustainability. I first became the special advisor on energy to the Army, so I helped stand up the Army's clean energy programs,
which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, think about the Army as a significant facility manager.
Yeah.
Right? So bigger, larger than Walmart. So what are they doing for energy efficiency, electric vehicles, what we were doing for large-scale renewables, reducing greenhouse gases, water and waste management, a really interesting and broad portfolio. But honestly, when we started it, this is back in 2009, 2010, you know, the Army had just begun to think about it.
Yeah.
And we were really doing some groundbreaking work, which is what led me to the White House role, where I oversaw a similar type of portfolio, but across the rest of the federal agencies. And a lot of the folks in the White House are working on 10,000-foot policy, you know, in climate, for instance, the Paris Agreement and greenhouse gas reductions. I get to work on actual, you know, implementation, operations of our facilities, and got to work with some amazing federal employees across the country and the work that they were doing within their own operations.
That's really down to the level of what people are actually doing in their businesses and in their homes as well, right?
That's exactly right. We did a lot of cross-sharing with corporations that, you know, were doing work within their own operations, and what could we learn about, you know, better management? What could we learn about implementing renewables? And for that, personally, I saw a lot in the public-private partnership space of long-term power contracts for our renewables, for instance, right? What is known as a power purchase agreement.
Yeah.
And we were getting those financed in many parts by third parties, right? So that's when I began to understand the financing side of this. And when you started to look at the broader problem, you know, we're going to need Hank Paulson, who was actually George Bush's Treasury Secretary and the former head of Goldman, put out a report this last fall that it's going to take $90 trillion in capital in the next 15 years to meet our climate goals, right? A significant amount of capital. And up to today, that's been limited to mostly private equity and big banks who have invested in the space. And there's a reason why, but we wanted to tackle those problems and open up these opportunities for everybody to get involved in the market, because really that's how we're going to change the game.
Because it needs to be more than just government expenditures and subsidies. You have to have the private sector engaged in the investment opportunities, right, for the whole sector to grow.
That's right. And I would argue that we're actually at a really unique point in the industry, specifically for solar, where the industry's maturing past where it even needs those subsidies.
Yeah.
It's becoming there's actually there's more employees now in solar energy than all fossil fuels combined. I mean, it's a really growing space. It's something where you can't export jobs when you're talking about putting solar panels or O&M, operation and maintenance of systems on people's roofs. So it's a really great growing industry. The challenge has been the capital to build these has continued to be expensive because the people that have that capital know that they're in a unique position, and we want to get more people involved. And so we've been doing that by opening up opportunities that others have not had a chance to really get involved in before. So we focused at first on operating solar assets, so buying projects that have universities or hospitals or school districts, buying power for the next 20 years off these solar panels, and then we can buy out the original developers, freeing them to go build new projects, and we take those investments and offer them to most anybody. It's still sort of a unique position for the time being, but we're working on technology improvements that anyone can invest.
John, let me ask you a question. As a veteran, and I got out in 1991, solar technology was not quite where it's at today, and there was not the manufacturing base available to bring the prices down. I hear nowadays that the military's been playing with electric Hummers for scout units because they're quieter. But was there a lot of buy-in from command within the military to do these things on hard site and, quite frankly, in the field?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I think what's really interesting is where the world lies now in national security. There is no more hard line between forward deployed and not forward deployed.
Right.
So whether it be we have soldiers fighting in today in Iraq, maybe even in Syria and Afghanistan, we also have folks flying UAVs based in Nevada, right, that happen
right.
to be over the Middle East or Yemen. And so, there's this constant back and forth on energy security. But what drove a lot of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans into the space and what created the culture change in the Pentagon that has driven them forward so significantly here was I was in Iraq in 2003 and 2004, lived in Uday Hussein's palace on the Tigris River. Every night, this is the most hostile sector in Baghdad at the time, we would have a group of Iraqis who worked on the base with us, and they would leave that evening. We knew they were taking intel with them, right? And so literally, if they left at 6 o'clock, by 6:45, we'd receive mortar rounds wherever our fuel trucks were.
Wow.
Right? So we knew we had to move our fuel trucks. So we did that. And for me, that was the first time I began to understand energy security. But I also understood that because we were taking entire squadrons of soldiers and deploying them to just protect fuel convoys.
Right.
Right.
And what turned out happening is basically 80% of our load going into Iraq and Afghanistan was for fuel and water, mostly for fuel.
Right.
And so, yeah, we were literally putting lives on the line because you couldn't come up with things like solar-powered generators. And now we are. But
so you bring in your own solar apparatus for your water purification, for telecommunications, for critical service, and that is not subject to those kinds of explosion hazards that you have with a fuel truck. And I know the military has considered the whole energy efficiency and renewable initiative as a force multiplier for the reasons that you just mentioned. And I think that's been one of the reasons the prices have come down, right? It's because the military has done a lot of bulk purchasing in the last four to eight years. And what I wanted to ask you is, do you see this initiative slowing down under the Trump administration? And maybe we can get to that when we come back after our break to talk about, you know, what is the change in administration going to have as an impact on this industry, or is the global momentum going to carry it? So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
The Alliance for Retired Americans brings activists together to educate and mobilize retirees around local, state, and national issues. Members work to strengthen three planks of retirement security: Medicare, Social Security, and pensions, and to improve the quality of life for current and future retirees. Their priorities include expanding Social Security benefits. The threats to Medicare, Social Security, and pensions are real, but the Alliance uses grassroots engagement and direct outreach to members of Congress to fight back. Recent successes include preventing a 50% Medicare premium increase that would have affected millions of retirees. Join the Alliance today at retiredamericans.org and help ensure that seniors' issues like high prescription drug prices get the attention they deserve.
We are the BCTGM, the union representing bakery workers. We have been joining forces with our members and thousands of community partners across America to end corporate exploitation of workers across the globe. Our campaign has its roots with the Mondelez Nabisco's firing of 600 workers at its Chicago bakery and replacing them with workers earning poverty wages in Mexico. College and university student activists have reached out to our global campaign, and the BCTGM is proud to welcome the more than 20 million students across America as partners in defeating this greed-based business model. Student voices have changed the world, and these future community and national leaders will add energy and heightened spirit to the BCTGM's consumer boycott of Mexican-made Nabisco products. Join the fight. Help change the world. Invite the Nabisco 600 team to your campus by visiting fightforamericanjobs.org. Follow us on Facebook at Nabisco 600 BCTGM Local 300.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you're doing for the community. In studio today with me, we've got Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back.
Hello, how are you? And Just Transitions is talking about clean capital and how we can invest in renewable energy, the energy system of the future. And John Powers of Clean Capital is with us as our guest. And John, you're going to tell us a little bit about the momentum of this renewable energy industry as an investment opportunity and whether or not our current president's priorities are really going to put a dent in this.
Yeah, Patty, so I think it's important to note that, you know, the industry has matured significantly under the leadership of President Obama and others to the point where now we're seeing the critical policy levers that will continue to drive the industry moving toward the states, where that federal there's always stuff that the Trump administration could do that can begin to slow roll and be an issue, but I think there's so much momentum on this. The jobs have been created here at home, and there's an argument to be had about the power of this industry moving forward. And the industry itself has now matured where it's making those arguments to Congress and to the administration in a jobs away, which I think is
260,077 solar workers in 2016.
Incredible.
That's a 25% increase over the prior year. And
one in every 50 jobs last year that came online in the United States was a solar job.
That's right. And that doesn't even count the wind.
Yeah.
Right.
And John, let me ask you a question. I mean, I drive a Chevy Volt. And the Chevy Volt, I got to tell you, is the neatest thing I've ever driven, with the exception of a Bradley fighting vehicle. And no, they wouldn't let me shoot the main gun. But they, you know, so, but life was a forward air controller with an armored unit. But, you know, when the Volt came out and it was going through its testing and its paces and all this kind of other stuff, there was so much negative press that came out against the Volt. Not from the media, but from politicians.
Right.
And now they panned the Volt, and they did it for very specific reasons, because Chevy wasn't writing the big checks like, you know, the oil companies were. But I mean, are we going to run into a situation where we're going to continue to have politicians just doing everything they possibly can to slow down a transition to wind and solar and other alternative energies?
You know, you make an important point. I think especially for all the listeners to the show today, what action can you take to actually start to continue to drive this forward? One, it's showing your support for these industries to your local politician. But I think going back to the jobs argument, Charles, they're hearing that now within their own districts. Like the industries can go in and argue here in Pittsburgh or here in Buffalo, where I'm from, you know, here in Alabama, right, there's X amount of jobs in this space. And there's actually a significant amount of veterans joining the space as well. So that is helping moving some politicians forward for sure. And the second thing is, going back to the investment question, Patty, there's a significant amount of capital now continuing to move in this space. And as a result, you know, I think those arguments also can be heard, you know, heard in Washington from the Goldman Sachs of the world, right, and others who are putting significant money to work into clean energy. And that helps to neutralize the argument itself a little bit on the right. And what we're trying to do for the market at Clean Capital is we're trying to allow people to vote with your dollars, put your money where your mouth is, right? If you really believe in this opportunity, so to give you a sense, the first investment opportunity we had last year were 15 different solar projects in 7 states. It was around, for us, about a $20 million investment. And we had a major life insurance company, John Hancock, provide a significant portion of that.
Yeah.
And then we had a bunch of individuals who, for the first time, were allowed to invest along with them. And they're seeing 10 to 12% returns on their money. You know, I'd argue there's very few places you can see that across the market at all.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep rolling those type of investments out. And as more and more of that happens, you know, Charles, the less the political arguments of the ingrained fossil fuel industry will stand.
And you also have a global market pushing in this direction. I mean, China just announced, what was it, a $335 trillion over the next 10 years investment for renewable energy in their space. Are you into that market as well, or are you just strictly limiting your activity to domestic?
We are currently only doing domestic investments, but we want to move international. But I think Patty, an important point is, if we don't make these moves here in the U.S., the other countries will, and we're going to fall behind significantly and lose the fantastic lead that we have in this space already.
Yeah. Well, I am very encouraged that, you know, people seem to be embracing renewable energy as a concept. I mean, not only in communities committing to going 100% renewable, but also whole states refusing to buckle down to the back to coal, back to fossil future. I know the transition is painful in some places, but as you look at the investment opportunities on a community-by-community basis, because these things are so distributed, you have opportunities all across the country in this renewable energy revolution.
I agree, and I think what we're seeing here at home is a recommittal even in the face of an administration that may not be supportive, of actually large corporations who are going 100% renewable energy.
Yes.
Apple, Walmart, you know, there's a whole list of them across the spectrum that are getting it. And what we would, I'd love to, again, for the listeners, is make that ask of your company. Right? What can they do in this space? Because, you know, the Navy's doing a gigawatt, which is a significant amount of energy, through renewable energy contracts, and they're saving millions of dollars by doing it.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just about the green environmental piece. It's also about, you know, better management of their own funds.
Yeah.
And, you know, here in Pennsylvania, John, we had Gamesa USA, and they were making very, very high-quality wind turbines. And they ran into some problems. You know, they had good machinists on site. They were making a quality product. They were selling them. But part of the thing that they ran into was the subsidies. It was on again, off again, on again, off again. And none of the major people that would become a producer would buy solar or turbines because they didn't know if, you know, they couldn't plan it business-wise.
The investment tax credits were rescinded and then restored in a different form. And, you know, they did a huge subsidy for a petrochemical plant, petrochemical refinery, $6.5 billion subsidy. And nobody questioned whether that was going forward or not.
Right.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, is this starting to change, too? Is that part of the political environment that's changing?
So we saw a major extension last year at the end of 2000, and I guess a year and a half ago now, for the investment tax credit and the wind production tax credit. And one of the things that I think, before Harry Reid left the Senate, he did very wisely, is he tied that to oil exports.
Yes.
So the Republicans wanted oil exports. The Democrats wanted a clean energy extension. And that sort of marrying those two together politically is a smart move because, you know, people can get sort of both their needs and wants addressed there. And really what it comes down to it is I think we're getting to the point now where let the market take over.
Yeah.
And let's have this fight. And you know, we are now, clean energy is now cheaper than coal in many places or on its way to being there. And, you know, we'll continue to be there. And again, arguing that you know, it's not that we don't want to see folks, especially in a place like Pennsylvania, right, where there has been a history of folks working in the coal industry. It's not that we don't want to see them go back to work. It's let's put them back to work in a new way. And
let's put them back to work manufacturing solar cells.
Or in a field that has a future. You know, there's all kinds of things there.
There's so much exciting stuff in the industry, and you're seeing now places like Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Cleveland, trying to come back around and focus in those areas. And I think it's the right move because it's the industry of the 21st century.
Excellent. And how do we find out more about what your company does and how people can get engaged with what you do?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is go sign up at cleancapital.com, cleancapital.com, and we communicate pretty regularly through those through that site for folks if they want to get involved. And, you know, we're trying to go out and help also. We have a you can click on our blog there. There's a lot of education pieces about why you want to invest in clean energy, what's happening in the industry. So if you want to learn more, you know, go through cleancapital.com and we'll keep you updated.
Excellent.
Hey, John, I got to ask you one question. When you were in the Army over in Baghdad, what was your job?
Charles, I was a platoon leader in a field artillery unit, and we parked artillery systems and hit the streets. I was a mayor of about a 50,000-person sector in Baghdad.
So
it was a fascinating and, as I said, life-changing experience for me.
I got to tell you, some of the civilian jobs that people came back from Iraq with were just absolutely incredible. I actually had a friend of mine who, you know, there but for the grace of God go I was still in the military, who ended up being the sheriff.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, they made you what?
That's right.
Did they run out of people? I'm just saying. But, John, hey, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Would you do me a favor? Stay on the line. I got a quick question for you as we transition.
Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon on Just Transitions. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you, Charles. It's an honor to be on the Union Edge.
There you go. And, John, we appreciate it very much. But in the meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.